Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Holt. I'm going to read through our roll call here for the record. If you can please indicate that you are here by unmuting or speaking up if you're in the room with me, that will be appreciated. I will start with Ashley Miller.
Present.
Ashley. Fanny Adams.
Hi, everyone. Present.
Thank you, Fanny. Rachel Nessie.
Present.
Hi, Rachel. Jamila Rutherford. Don't think we have Jay with us today. Jesse Nielsen.
Present.
Thank you, Jesse. Caroline Jackson.
Present.
Caroline. Irina Alonzo lets her that she would not be attending today. Mara Romero. Olia Goralpina. Stephanie Gracie. Holly Stevens. Christina Dirks.
Afternoon, everybody. I'm present.
Thank you, Christina. Alan Lazo.
Hi, everybody. I'm here by video.
Barbara Geyer, here in person. Hi, Barbara. And Yoon Ho.
I'm present.
And Yoon. Okay, and with that, we have met quorum and we are officially called to order.
All right, we're going to take a moment and do a little quick round of introductions, familiarizing yourself really with me more than with one another. So if you could take 30 seconds or so, kind of identify who you are and what brings you to this role, that would be fantastic. I'll let you do, Nikki will call your name and then you'll have the opportunity to respond. Thank you so much.
Great, and then we'll call Dr. Holt at the end again so he can introduce himself. Let's start with Ashley Miller.
Hello, everyone. So my name is Ashley Miller. I am one of the jurisdictional partners to FHAC. So I actually work for the city of Gresham. I am currently the interim director of urban design and planning for the city. One of the areas that I oversee is Gresham's administration of the HUD, CDBG, and home grant funds. That's sort of what brings us to this partnership today. Kind of related, I also oversee Gresham's allocation of Metro Affordable Housing Bond funding as well as a number of other areas, such as our rental housing inspection program, which is definitely related to fair housing as well. I'll leave it at that.
Thank you, Ashley. Fanny Adams.
Hi, everyone. Just to kind of piggyback off what Ashley was saying, I'm also part of the CDBG program, Community Development Block Grant. I administer the funds for Multnomah County, and I'm part of the consortium that's made up of City of Gresham, Multnomah County, and City of Portland. They're with UMA. And for the same reasons as Ashley, we appreciate having a seat at the table to kind of hear what's going on with housing, how we can implement new ideas, vote on things if that comes up. So thank you for having me.
Thank you, Fanny. Rachel?
Hi, I'm Rachel Macy. I am also a jurisdictional partner. I work with Ashley Miller at the City of Gresham, and I oversee most of the day-to-day for our CDBG and home grants. And work really closely with PHB staff when we're doing our consolidated plan and action plan.
Thank you, Rachel. I believe Jamila Rutherford joined us. Jay, we're doing some brief introductions. If you're available to give about a 30-second introduction to our facilitator, Dr. Holt.
Hi, I'm sorry that I was late. My name is Jay Tai, and
I've been on this advisory committee for about 2.5, I think 3 years at this point. And I have an organization called, or a company called Responsible Media Group, where I do anti-racist media consulting. That's it. Hi.
Thank you. Next up, Jesse.
Hi, good afternoon, Dr. Little. My name is Jesse Nielsen. I use the pronouns. I have been on this committee just for a short period of time. It was my second meeting officially. I am a lawyer by training. Previously worked as a civil rights attorney, probably will again someday in the future. I work at the Bureau of Labor Industries now in the Civil Rights Division, working on kind of policy matters. I worked on fair housing issues for some time, and housing has been an important issue in my life personally and professionally. So that's kind of what brings me.
Caroline.
Hi, I'm Caroline Bennett. I'm a former Bureau of Labor
Management.
Hi, I'm Caroline Jackson. I use she, her pronouns. I work for Outside In, which is a nonprofit that does social services and healthcare, including transitional housing. And I just finished a master's degree in public policy from Portland State, where I hope to kind of continue to pursue a career in affordable housing and supportive housing policy. Happy to be here. Thanks.
Christina.
Did you say Christina? I couldn't hear.
I did. Sorry, Christina. Yes, that's you.
Hi, everybody. Christina Dirks. I use she, her pronouns. I'm currently the Director of Policy and Planning at Home Forward. I already know you all from just being around. Prior to joining Home Forward, I was actually with the Rental Services Office and had the pleasure of working with Nikki for a little under 2 years, dealing with rental services policy and programming through the city. And then prior to that, I was a legal services attorney for 18 years here in Portland, representing low-income tenants in fair housing legal claims, housing legal claims, and various other types of housing-related matters. I've worked closely with CAT, Fair Housing Council, and lots of folks in the space. So nice to be here. And I was actually a member of the Fair Housing Advisory Committee back in the day. So back again.
Alan.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Alan Lazo. I use he, him pronouns. I'm the executive director at the Fair Housing Council of Oregon. So we're here to help provide technical assistance around the fair housing aspects of the Fair Housing Advisory Committee. And I've been a member of the committee for several years now.
Thank you, Alan. Barbara.
I'm Barbara Geyer, sitting here at the table in person. I'm starting my fourth year on the committee.
And lastly, you.
Hello, everyone. My name's Young. My pronouns are she, her, hers. And I'm the education director at Community Alliance of Tenants. We provide renters' rights information and advocacy for tenants across the state, and majority of that being, a lot of tenants in the Portland metro area, and fair housing rights and protections are really important aspect of tenant protection. So we want to stay on top of all of that information and share what we can with the group. Thank you.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you so much for taking a moment and helping to orient me to you. I'll do the same and orient you to me. I am Dr. Stephen Holt. I am the principal of TriExcellence, which is a consulting company here in the city of Portland. We work in Portland and in Vancouver. We do quite a bit of work in relationship with government agencies, helping to do community engagement, facilitation work, some strategic development, and I've been in that seat for 8 years. On a personal note, I've been the chair of the North Northeast Housing Strategies Oversight Committee since its inception, so since 2014. Sat in that seat, so I've had plenty of meetings with the Portland Housing Bureau in a variety of spaces. I also happen to facilitate the Bond Oversight Committee for the Portland Housing Authority. Yeah, since its inception, helped to onboard and develop that. So, Alan, good to see you, sir. I look forward to us having a fantastic meeting. And more on a, just a human note, I am glad it's summer. I'm really, really glad it's summer. Well, today we are going to go with the agenda as you have seen. What will happen next is our conversation around disproportionate housing needs analysis, and then there'll be an opportunity after the presentation for some committee feedback. And let me say in advance around feedback, my effort is to make sure that the voices are heard so that we create space so that everyone has an opportunity to speak, which means that I will ask if anyone begins to go too long, I'll ask us to wrap up our thought so as to make sure that others have the opportunity to engage and hear and react. We want to be responsible and respectful of all the talent and the intelligence that's here in the room, and then make sure that we're benefiting from the information that we're covering. With that being said, our presenters, let me.
Uma insists that I start the title slide, even though I'm never on the agenda, but I will do that and get us oriented. Okay. So the primary item for us today is to jump back into our Portland Fair Housing Plan. Specifically, we'll be looking at the disproportionate housing needs analysis. You know me, Mickey Loon Claire, Policy and Program Coordinator at PHB. Vimal and Uma, if you could do a brief introduction, we have some new committee members as well before we move forward.
Good afternoon. I'm Uma Krishnan and part of the data team. I have been with PHP for about 6.5 years now, and I have the good news about getting old is I have worked with several of them, not the young ones.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Nimola. I'm with the data team, so I'm in the problems meetings.
The presentation today is intended to share with you three main points. What is disproportionate housing need, and what are the four housing problems as defined by HUD? Who lives in housing units with housing problems? And what is the spatial distribution of housing units with problems? Before we move forward with that, we wanted to bring back a slide from our last set of analysis around low-income households in Portland, because we will be looking at those households again today in this presentation. If you recall, this slide showed the growth in households by income level from 2011 to 2019. That date range was selected because 2010 was the last time that we had done the analysis of impediments to fair housing and this fair housing data review and planning process. So in that time, you can see that our extremely low income households, that's households with income less than 30% AMI, has increased by 11.6%, nearly 12% growth rate. Compared to households on whole in Portland, there was a growth rate of 8%. So we can see that they are growing at a faster rate overall in terms of households.
So good afternoon once again, and thank you, Nikki. That was a lovely introduction. And we are very appreciative of this opportunity to present something which is not that uplifting. It's disproportionate. And we're talking about housing problem. And when we were working on this slide, and I'm going to say this, Bimal, he said, Uma, this is so dry. And it sort of resonated with me. And at the end of these slides, you would probably concur with me that people who don't make that much money. You know, we categorize them in various income groups, extremely low income household, low income, very low. But it's very cut and dry for them. It's the truth is, the dry truth is that they face these housing problems and they don't have a choice, and that is disproportionate. And that is certainly not colorful. And for us, the data folks, this is helpful because we can bring to you people who work on policies and programs that, you know, this substantiates what we all see all the time. We're talking, we're doing a lot, but still there's a lot of need, and we need to continue doing this. And that brings me back to these definitions. And HUD has this definition of disproportionate housing need, and it's a requirement as part of their entitlement programs that we have to establish needs, and then we spend on programs. So a disproportionate greater housing need exists when the percentage of people in an income category who are members of a particular race or ethnic group is at least 10 percentage points higher than percent of people in the category as a whole. And I have a table in the next slide that makes it a little bit more, you know, that'll explain it better, but this is literally the definition that they have. And the rest of the slide, we keep talking about these problems. There are four housing problems. So the first two, it's units that lack, you know, kitchen facility, incomplete kitchen facility, units that lack plumbing facilities. So these together form the substandard housing units per HUD definition. And then the third one, it's more than one person per room. It's overcrowding. Personally, I've never really understood this overcrowding because I grew up in India. We have a completely different definition. So the last one is cost burden greater than 30%, including utilities, then a household is supposed to be cost burden. And these are housing housing problem. And then we also get data that's severe housing problem. So it's 1 to 3 above, and then the cost burden just goes up. From 30%, we go up to 50%. And this literally means if a household makes $1,000 a month, $500 is just for rent. So I don't know what, I mean, that doesn't leave much for other things. Next slide. So this table is an effort to really kind of explain the disproportionate housing needs. I have new glasses, so I can actually see some of the numbers. And what you see, the highlighted ones, the whole idea is we have about 37% of occupied housing units that have one housing problem or the other. So on the first column, we have race and ethnicity, and the next column is, you know, how many units, and units and households are sort of used interchangeably. And we have the number of households that have one or more housing issue, and then we have the share. If you look at the highlighted third column, you'll see that, you know, African-Americans as a group, Hispanic as a group, and Pacific Islanders, their share of finding themselves in one of the housing problem situation or the other, it's much higher than that 37. It's like, it's as high as 57, 48, 51. So that clearly, you know, we're talking disproportionate housing need. And this becomes very important as you all try to balance that with fair housing. It's, you know, everybody is, what's that? It's, you're covered under affirmative action, right? So, but there is disproportionate need. Next slide. So this slide talks about the substandard housing, and as a reminder, units that either do not have complete kitchen facility or plumbing, it's substandard housing unit. And you just look at the 3,700, that's tiny, tiny proportion of the 260,000 total housing units we have in the city. It's just 1.4%. But I think what when you start looking at these numbers a little bit closer after grouping them by income level, the realization that hits you is, you know, 81% of these units are occupied by extremely low, very low, and low income households. So we are already talking exacerbated housing situation. So this one is, the effort is when we started doing this analysis, you do look at the same number of units or household, close to 96,000 households that face one problem or the other, but then you group them in different ways, and data people, we find it so fascinating. It's like, now you start looking by tenure, occupied, owner-occupied versus renter-occupied, and it's clear that, you know, just under one half of renter-occupied housing households, they have one housing problem or the other, and a lot of this is a consequence of, we don't have that data, but it's attributable to the housing cost burden, and I was looking at some of the other AIs from nearby jurisdictions. Pretty much all along the West Coast and even folk places in the East Coast, it's the housing cost burden that really contributes to the housing problem. So this one is by income level and tenure. The blue bars are owner-occupied and the green ones are renter-occupied. And along the Y-axis, you see these X-axis, and you have these, is it income? Income levels, see, so much for my new glasses. And then on the x-axis, you have these percentages, but clearly a very high proportion of extremely low, very low, and low income renter-occupied households have one housing problem or the other. This slide is looking at housing problems with, and you group them by race and ethnicity. And the three bars are like, the green is renter occupied, blue owner, and the beige is like all occupied units. Again, the disproportionate housing need, if you look at the bars around the African-American community, the Hispanics, the Pacific Islanders, the disproportionate housing need really stands up. Really high proportion of households that belong to these race or ethnic groups do have one or more of the housing problems. Next. So this one, and we always struggle with the map. We do like maps, but it's kind of hard to kind of explain it. It's clear, like on one hand, you have these owners with housing problems, their spatial distribution. And what you see are these census tracts, which are the building blocks for the city of Portland. And then you have renters. Clearly, on the renter side, you see a lot more dark, darkened census tract, which really needs this is where you find, especially towards the east side, high proportion of rented households who have one or more housing problems. The owner-occupied, at least it's a little bit more checkered, but still here also there are owner households that have really high, there's a spatial concentration of households that have one or the more housing problems. And the concentration again seems to be as you move towards the east. These are the spatial distribution of households that have one or more housing problems. And next slide. So I'm going to hand this over to Bimal to talk about severe housing problems.
Okay, thank you, Uma. When I talked about the dry numbers, I'm talking more about depressing numbers to present. You know, someday I'll have to present numbers that's really exactly really exciting to present. But this is a good start. So Uma, thank you. So Uma talked about the housing problems in general, but I'm going to talk about the severe housing problems. So they are, as Uma said, there are four different criteria, one for plumbing, one for kitchen facilities, and the overcrowding and the cost burden. So only difference between the one that Uma described earlier for the housing problem is pretty much more than 30% cost burden. But when I say the severe housing problem, it means all the three criteria plus the 50% cost burden. So these are more severe, right? So what we find is that all occupied units, So all occupied units with severe housing problems would be 20%. And breaking that by the tenure type, it is 12% for the owner occupied
and 30% for renter-occupied units. So emphasizing again, what is clear is that one third of renter-occupied units within the city of Portland have severe housing problems. And this essentially is driven by the problem of housing cost, burden of 50%, as well as because of substandard housing. Next slide, please. Here we are looking at the units with severe housing problems by income level. And this slide pretty much follows the slide Uma presented. So very high proportion of extremely low, very low, and low-income households, so that they have a high percentage of units with one or more severe housing problems, whether they be renters or owners. But it's more skewed towards the renters, which have like much more higher severe housing problems. And owners do also have, on the lower income, they do have some higher severe housing problems because of more likely because the older starts, and they are also more likely to be on fixed income. Next slide, please. And so, similar to the earlier housing problem that we saw for the housing problems in general, the pattern we see is pretty much very similar for the severe housing problems as well. So, data show that among the various groups by race and ethnicity, African American, Hispanic, and Pacific Islander renter households face severe housing problems. So they face disproportionate housing needs. So the three different segments in the middle are the ones showing the disproportionate housing needs. Next slide, please. This once more again, this is the map showing the distribution of households with severe housing problems. And the right side is the renter households, and the left side is the owner households. And the renter households with severe housing problems are considered, again, more on the east side and far east side. And there are also pockets of areas with severe housing problems in the different tracks in North Portland, in Northeast Portland, and also in some areas in the Southwest Portland. But when you start looking at the owner households, you'll see that the owner households are actually less, their percentage is less than the rental households, but they seem to be much more uniformly dispersed all over the city compared to rental households. They are more concentrated on the east side. The last slide. And at this point, I'm actually switching to the different portion of our segment of the data. So we're not looking at the severe housing problems, but we're looking at elderly households with housing problems. So so we're looking at the house the cost burden of 30%, not 50% at this point. And you see at this in this chart, you'll see that the one on the far left is both owners and renters with a household having no household more older than 60. And the one in the middle shows the households having household members between the age of 62 and 75. And extreme right is the households showing having one of the members being at the age of 75. So you can see whether they be rented or they be owner, the older households seem to have a higher proportion of people and households with a housing severe, housing problems. And if you look at the households with even within this household with the senior housing people, you'll find that the household with at least one person at the age of 75 has a higher proportion of housing problems. That's the last slide I have.
Yes, thank you. Come on.
Yeah. So I'm turning to Nikki to summarize some of the findings.
Thank you, Kamal. This slide may look familiar. We put it at the last in the last parts of the analysis for low-income households. On the left is the box with definitions. We just want to keep returning to this as we go through this planning process, because we are using the formal definitions of barriers and impediments. So I just have that there for your reference as you may be looking through this again. And then on the right, we have the high-level points that Vimal and Uma would like us to take away from the presentation today. Being severely housing cost burdened, which is paying more than 50% of household income on housing costs, or cost burden, defined as paying more than 30% of your household income on housing costs, is primarily driving what is a housing problem as defined by HUD, experienced by extremely low, very low, and low-income households. A disproportionate housing need exists for African Americans, Hispanics, and Pacific Islander households in Portland. While only a small fraction of the city of Portland's housing stock is actually classified as substandard, just over 80% of this stock is occupied by extremely low, very low, and low-income households. And finally, elderly owner and renter households that contain at least one household member, age 75 or more, experience a very high incidence of the housing problem. So the next steps, we will be reviewing these primary takeaway summary points and bringing them up again when we start to have policy conversations, when we look at those policy recommendations. And we will also be looking at a dissimilarity and displacement analysis. This is in line again with our Portland Fair Housing Plan, where we'll be moving through all the identified analysis, which was constructed loosely on the standard analysis of impediments by HUD. And that concludes today's presentation. I'll hand it back to Dr. Holt so we can collect your comments and feedback.
Thank you very much. Great information. Hopefully you have it in your inbox as well so you can refer to it. I will begin by going to those who are with us remotely and give you an opportunity for feedback and or question. If you do have one, I will have you indicate by hand raise. That way we don't overspeak. Christina.
Thank you. Thank you, Vimal and Uma. Nice to see you again. And that was really great information. I had a quick question in terms of how are we determining the number of substandard housing units? That seems like a really small number. And I think I know from personal experience that the number is much larger than that. So I'm wondering if it's relying on BDS, you know, reported inspections or where we're getting that number from. Thanks.
Great question.
So, Christina, I'm not entirely sure how the collection occurs at the local level, but the data is it's based off of regular census data. And my guess is because it's tied to the housing condition, it's not ACS. Probably it's a sample from, it's called the American Housing Survey, which takes into account detailed condition of housing, and probably they're getting a sample and putting together this tabulation. But then please also note that the definition for substandard is very specific. It's just incomplete kitchen and incomplete and all incomplete plumbing. So probably, you know, what you say that, you know, this number doesn't resonate close to the truth is likely true, but this is the best we have to work with. And we can always kind of go back to the age of the housing and with the assumption that a lot of the multifamily, we've been building more and more multifamily in the recent decades, and those are of much better quality. Probably the number is high, but it may not be that high.
And can I just ask a follow-up question? And sorry to kind of nitpick on this. So is the assumption that these were units that were not provided with a lack of a complete kitchen or complete plumbing at the time of rental, or that it could have fallen into that state because of failure to make routine repairs and maintenance?
It is at the time of data collection. So it has nothing to do with who provided what.
Thanks.
Thank you. Alan.
Thanks, Dr. Holt. And thanks for the presentation. A couple pieces. One is, you know, I think particularly with the fair housing aspects of pieces that we're looking at here, I think it's really helpful for us to cross-tab the data and the demographics. And this is a less demographic one, but one example is in the severe housing problems that shows the bars. And Bimal, you pointed this out and the little caption points it out, but we could also potentially use visually, we could use stacked bars there to illustrate in that 30%, right? As you said, most of that is made up of the issue around cost burden rather than the other disproportionate housing needs, right? Those I'm assuming are much less smaller percentage. So we could actually see that the issue there is cost burden. We could see that through a stacked bar potentially. And the other place where I think cross-tab, you know, cross-referencing some of the demographics might be helpful is we sort of know this intrinsically about the demographics geographically and spatially, but where we show the spatial distribution of households, again, with the housing problems, we might also be able to show with cross-hatching or something, the areas that have the demographics related to race and ethnicity, which we know are also focused on the eastern part of the city. So that we see the darker areas that have the housing problems, we would also see across a darker cross-hatching that would illustrate those are also areas that have higher concentrations of communities of color, generally speaking. So again, I think we know it sort of intuitively and we can narrate it, but we might be also show it visually.
I fully agree with you. Actually, we had talked about like swing distribution of all the households as the central as the owner households, and also that the characteristics of those areas, but we didn't get around to it. But that's a great solution. I think you guys have more work people can start with. But in terms of like stacking data, like we have it's very likely it's possible to get the data from the chat that we have gotten. So we only know that it has one of these four housing problems, but we don't really know the breakdown of those four housing problems. That data can be more likely fictitious, but I don't think we can break it down by the chat.
So we're just making an assertion though, then that it's the higher proportion problem is the cost burden, not necessarily the data, underlying data. Okay.
Yeah, actually for the severe housing problem, the difference between the housing problem and the severe housing problem is the cost burden. So, you know, like well, that's the main difference. So
okay.
Implying that's more likely to have a higher cost burden.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, let me just lower my hand. Thank you for the presentation. I just have some things that as we're going over the data that I had curiosity about and that might kind of overlap with some of the questions of, you know, cross-sectional information that we can look at. Some things that sparked my interest were especially around the elderly households, the 75 and up. Something that I don't know that we would be able to pull information from if we have access to that is whether they were, because I think the way that it was phrased was households with somebody in certain age categories, 75 and up and 65 and up, but not including 75 and up. And so I was curious about if it has any impact. I would imagine so, if the household is a person who, for example, is 75 and alone rather than a part of a household. Just, you know, being on the hotline, you know, you hear about a lot of people having a hard time advocating for themselves, especially if they're alone and they don't have, you know, kind of the safety network or community supporting them. And then also, I don't know if this would really, I think part of this information kind of in the background of it would be the households with an elderly person in it could be like multi-generational households that are often, you know, probably different cultural backgrounds. And then also some curiosity around, and this often kind of is intersectional, but the elderly households and people with disabilities. So just as I was looking at the information, I was thinking about, you know, what are the barriers that they would come across and what are the impediments and how do they access services and, you know, how do they prevent, you know, the substandard conditions from happening. Although those categories had to do more with the general categories of housing problems for owners. So that kind of captures like the overcrowding and the income, the ability to pay the rent, and as well as like the other substandard housing conditions. But yeah, just some thoughts and some questions that came to mind as I was listening to the presentation.
Thank you very much for that feedback. I don't know if anyone has what to say. Thanks for the feedback. That's great. So actually, we should be able to break down the segregated households data by age, not specifically by race and ethnicity also. I'm not sure about other dimensions at this point, but definitely by race and ethnicity.
And probably, Hyung, it's good to see you. And you're probably thinking about, you know, the household types, and from what you were saying, it's about, you know, are they, because this is tied to head of the household, are they with other people? So, and it's just that we would have to go back to our other source. You know, we can look at ACS and cross-tab it with household types. And a lot of these much older households, those are single person households. And, you know, I'm just speaking from it. I don't have the data with me, but we do have, especially in the city, a significant portion of elderly household who are single person households. And this conversation has come up tied to, you know, they're on fixed income and the taxes are high. But if there is interest, we can definitely detail these household types by age.
Thank you, great comment. I see no other hands. I'll give a moment. Those who are in our remote meeting space. Excellent. I will go to the committee members who are here in the room. Barb, any comments?
No, I don't have anything to add that then wasn't covered.
Would you push the button so you'd be capturing?
There we go. There you go. No, I don't have anything to add that wasn't covered. Thank you.
Okay. Excellent. Well, without any further discussion related to the presentation, thank you, presenters, for the information that was covered and the interaction and dialogue. The next item on our agenda is the space for public comment. Do we have anyone signed up for public comment? Okay. Well, let me start with Jay Hubbard. Are you present? And Joe Moore. Kathleen Swift. And then Barb. Well, I think we have gone through the agenda for the day. Great for us to be together on this sunny afternoon in July. Any closing comments?
I will follow up with an updated version of the presentation because we did just have a few final edits, as well as any follow-up information that Uma and Bimal want to add on. And other than that, I would just say our next meeting is scheduled in October, and we will be sending out materials for that shortly.
Thanks, everyone. Have an incredible afternoon. Stay well. Stay hydrated. Take care of yourselves. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Have a great afternoon.